Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be European and in the UK. Yes, we are still in the UK. I'm Carola Boom.
And I'm Rich McCarthy.
You're also still in the UK.
Yes, I am.
Sorry, I'm not funny.
I'm in the same room as Carola, so I'm still in the UK and I'm still in the EU.
You know, I'm always struggling with humour. As a German, you know, it's an effort.
Yeah, whereas it just comes like nature to me as a British person.
Right, what okay. are we doing today?
We are looking at the sixth chapter of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, and that chapter is justice. It's all about fairness. I think we mentioned that fairly soon, so I'll shut up about fairness right now.
No, it is...
It is a blank space in Carola's mind.
Well, this is a difficult one, isn't it? This chapter, I think, is the most difficult because I feel I don't have so much to say because all of the articles, and there are four articles, are all already covered by UK law.
But we can point out, I think, one of the things that we're going to be looking at is pointing out how UK law, UK justice fails and falls down flat on its face quite
yes.
a lot here.
And of course, then it's great to have the European Court of Justice. Right, so Article 47, as I said, right to an effective remedy and to a fair trial. And, you know, as I said, there are equivalences in our UK law, the Human Rights Act from 1998 or the Scotland Act from 1998. So there are, you know, national laws that cover that as well.
So the second paragraph says, everyone is entitled to a fair and public hearing within a reasonable time by an independent and impartial tribunal previously established by law. Everyone shall have the possibility of being advised, defended and represented. Third paragraph, legal aid shall be made available to those who lack sufficient resources, insofar as such aid is necessary to ensure effective access to justice. So yeah. We really fall down on that, I think, in the UK.
Yeah, and of course, in the last, I don't know how long it's been going on, but certainly in the last few years, possibly over the last decade, as we know, it has been in the news.
Since 2013, April the 1st, 2013.
Right.
That's when the legal aid budget was cut to save apparently save £350 million a year.
Oh, gosh. Okay. The Law Society provided a briefing also to the Parliament, and it's basically suggesting that they are now legal aid deserts. So they are part of the country that just do not have access to legal aid anymore. And that, of course, stands in contradiction to this article. I don't know if it has been tested. Certainly, our laws also suggest that legal aid should be available. So again, you know, we're not legal experts, but you would think that this should be actually contested.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the trouble is, though, the people who might contest it would be people who aren't getting legal aid. And they're people who don't have any money. Well, the big thing that I wanted to make, or the point that I wanted to make, was this is from the BBC in 2013, where they were looking at legal aid cuts. And... the legal aid cuts meant that some types of cases were no longer eligible for public funds, including divorce, child contact, welfare benefits, which seems very harsh when you realise what's been happening in terms of welfare benefits in the last 2 years. So, of course, those people cannot take the government to court when they've found that they've lost loads and loads of money, and you know they're losing their house, they're being all sorts of other things happening to them. Employment.
Right.
So we've had lots of employment happening with people having jobs where they're not entitled to work any hours.
They've got to work.
Yes, 0 hour contracts where they've effectively, to keep their job, they've got to work whenever they've asked, but they don't have to work.
Mm.
So employment, clinical negligence, health care, and we know how that's, there's been lots of problems with that, and how in the NHS, so the government's trying to privatise lots of that, and housing law, except in very limited circumstances.
Oh, wow. You know, even the barristers, even the legal professions are speaking up, saying that the system is creaking under the strains of austerity, which undermines the possibility of a just system or a reasonable just system, even.
Another point made by the BBC article that I was reading there says that victims of domestic violence must have proof before they can get legal aid for family cases.
Right.
Which highlights the case last week of Boris Johnson, where shouts and things smashing and being broken and all that was being heard.
So you would want somebody to record it.
And this shows why people are actually, and some people spoke of it at the time, is that they are advised to record things. And people in terms of domestic violence are advised to record things because otherwise they can't get redress.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got one statistics here as well. This comes again from the UK Law Society. Over a third, so 37% of the population, live in local authorities which do not have a single housing legal aid provider.
Wow, more than a third.
And they talk about legal aid deserts. And so,
if you get chucked out by a private landlord, you've not really got a leg to stand on if you don't have very much money because you can't take them to court. It just struck me as being very chilling in the UK that the areas which stopped being legally funded were welfare benefit, employment, clinical negligence and housing law, all of which affecting everybody.
Yeah.
And all those people who are poor, basically our government just said, sorry, if you're poor, tough. Yeah. Huge amounts of areas of your life you're not going to get any help with for legal aid.
And who does it give more?
And it gives massive more power to those people who are wealthy and have lots of money.
Of course, that fits in with what we're going to talk later, because you could say, okay, so why do we have a legal space where the market is regulated within the European Union, as well as services, as well as capital? But when it comes to the rights of individual citizens, we still have a diversity of legal spaces from the individual union, nation states.
Okay, sorry, it's sentence too long. You completely lost me there.
No, let me try again. Let me try again.
You've got to have your sentences like, you know.
Okay, if we take...
One breath long. Two at the most.
Full stop. So if we take our four freedoms, right?
Right.
So we have freedom of...
The European four freedoms.
Yeah, the European four freedoms. Freedom services. Of movement of goods, freedom of movement of services, freedom capital. Of capital.
And people.
And then people.
Or actually, it's not people, it's labour. So it's all said as... It's. I think the wording is labour rather than people.
Right. Okay, let me try differently.
Just as an aside, because if you think of it as services, goods, capital and labour really shows that it's all to do with people, people having businesses and making money. Whereas if you say people rather than labour, it completely changes the idea.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Because if you wanted to see the European Union as an unfinished project, you could actually say we did it. This goods and services in the market. So the market is now regulated as one space.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, done and dusted. We did it with the currency. If you see the currency as a financial, social, economic contract between individuals or parties, again, fine, we've done it. Yes,
well,
there are some options.
Places.
Yes, there are some exceptions. But the space where we haven't done it is the individual rights. So that allows us in the UK, for instance, to cut legal aid to an amount where in Germany it's a completely different picture, or in Finland. And I think that's what we might be talking about. That can be conceptualized as the unfinished project, because at the moment we've done the economic sphere of the European Union. We've managed it. We've completed. But stopping there would not give civil society individuals the right to have a same legal framework in order to redress issues that are to do with individual states' inabilities to put sufficient structures in place.
Okay, sorry, you're breaking the rules again. So, Article 48, That's the next article, which is the presumption of innocence and right of defence, which I think everybody would entirely agree with in a sort of Western European society, hopefully.
The first sentence of that, everyone who has been charged shall be presumed innocent until proved guilty according to the law.
But the big thing I've got here is not when tried by media, which again is a huge problem in the UK. Mm. Doesn't seem to be so much in other countries in Europe, but in the UK it really is. Yeah. We do have
a media which moved to the right, as we know, which quite often jumps to conclusion. So as we know, for instance, the Labour Party at the moment, there's an ongoing Equalities and Human Rights Commission going on that launched an investigation into anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. But what happened this week? There was a panorama, BBC panorama feature, which...
made by somebody who very much dislikes Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, I don't know. When I was watching it, I didn't know what was going on because I could see something wasn't said. And also the timing is really strange. So they obviously wanted to make a political point at a time where it cannot be other than a political stance. If we do have a formal probe into anti-Semitism by a national commission, Equalities and Human Rights Commission, why release this panorama session now?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, they would say, oh, but it's of interest to the public now, because when it's all done and dusted, then nobody will be interested anymore. It's like, yeah, but that means you're just trying to make as much kudos for yourself as possible just because this is up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, but as we said, you know, and of course this is slightly different. It's not a trial, you know, the Labour Party is not on trial, but it's a sort of similar issue, isn't it? Everyone has a right to a fair trial, and that means that the media should have restrictions in relation to reporting ahead of a trial context.
And if you think about that as seeming like a trial, it's not the same as people being in court. So the panorama people couldn't be held in contempt of court or anything.
Yeah.
But there is a sort of a trial going on for the Labour Party, presumably.
It's a complicated issue. Statistics that I've actually seen suggest that cases have reduced across the board since Corbyn came into effect. And then the question is, you know, what is this about? You know, mm-hmm. and what was unsaid. And there have been several documentaries before that, several investigations, also some Guardian articles that weren't mentioned in
the panorama
program. So there is an intention behind it. And, you know, and I think the Labour Party itself has actually said, yes, we have a problem, we're addressing it. It's not that they're denying that.
So it all seems to be a lot of stuff and nonsense about... not very much.
Well, I think
the panorama thing.
It's significant actually, because we, you know, that's
a bit more right wing machinations, it seems.
To me, that's an indication, you know, whether they have problems or not in relation to that. But just the way it's been formulated and put out and the timing of that, you know, to me, it's a confirmation that our media has moved to the right. And that, of course, there are a few media outlets which are not right-wing, but as we know, quite a lot of, you know, the BBC tends to be featuring more of the Conservatives and the Brexit Party than anybody else.
Mm. And we're going to look at that in a future episode.
Yeah, so maybe we'll have a look at the BBC.
There's no way that we are apologists for Jeremy Corbyn, but they just seem to be trying to slag him off for a political reason.
And have done so over the last 2 years.
And have been doing it ever since he came to the fore in the Labour Party,
Yeah, and of course, you know, and I think in society we can see that, you know, if you think about the bigger picture, I can understand why this might happen, because we know that Labour moved to the right under Blair as well. So many parties moved further to the right. The Conservatives are much more right than they ever were before. Labour during Blair moved to the right, and Corbyn was a sort of tug to the left. And that creates tension, and that creates tension within a big party like the Labour Party, so that there are sort of clashes within the party. But I think there are also some outside forces. And then, of course, the Conservatives wanting to hurt the Labour Party because it's the biggest party that might nip at their heels. You know, that's just not on. And then if our media is not unbiased, that's really a problem.
So much of our media is very biased, as we all understand, I think.
Yeah, and it's really annoying. I did actually have a lovely...
And that's where the trial by media problem also comes in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In Sweden, the state subsidizes the second largest newspaper in order to have another fuel in the mix.
Wow, that's really great.
And I just thought, wow, what a different kind of solution of ensuring that there's not a monopoly of voices within the media landscape.
Yeah.
I mean, having said that, they still read much more newspapers. And I think in the UK, we've moved into the digital sphere much more. So I don't know how that relates. But of course, we know that one of the problems in the UK is that there has been such a investment into the BBC that the BBC is so dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Across many channels. And if the BBC loses its neutrality, then we're really in trouble. And actually, we are scuppered at the moment.
Yes.
That's why we're dithering.
I do think that, yes.
On the edge of Europe. So Article 49.
Okay, this is principles of legality and proportionality of criminal offences and penalties. And that, so the first paragraph is stating that you can't be held guilty of a criminal offence which wasn't there when you did it. So, for example, say you have a car and at the moment it's not a brilliant car and it's putting out a certain amount of pollution. Most cars these days put out pollution. And then say next year the government changes the law and saying you can only drive cars which are cleaner than the type of car you have this year. So next year they can't then sue you. You can't be tried for having committed the crime of driving a polluting car the year before because it wasn't a crime when you did it. So
yeah, and we've got a diesel car, so at some point we have to.
I know, yes, and it's not a very good diesel car because you're insisting that we get that one because it was a nice color and it was not very far away.
The fact that it was diesel wasn't the important part, but I think we fell into the trap like many other people.
No, we didn't. We went for diesel because we had a big caravan that we were trying to take on holidays with us at the time, and we wanted something that would be able to pull the caravan. And
so are diesels more powerful?
Yeah, diesel cars are more powerful than non-diesel cars. That's right. One of the primary reasons why initially diesel was better for big cars, and it was more, you got a lot more miles to the gallon in a diesel big car than you did in a petrol big car.
Right. So we not only have, I not only have Flugscham, but you have diesel scham.
Yeah, caused by you as well. So.
Okay. Well, let's move on quickly on. Right, okay. And then the third sort of sentence of Article 49 also suggests that the severity of penalties must not be disproportionate to the criminal offence. And again, you know, we know the principle of proportionality. I think we don't have to go into it. I think there will be cases where we can point out that maybe it was a disproportionate offence, and of course that's where you can go to a higher court to appeal.
Mm.
And then Article 50.
Article 50, right not to be tried or punished twice in criminal proceedings for the same criminal offence. So in America that would be called double jeopardy, I think. Or there was even a film about it. And I can't remember who was in it right now. There you go. This is me dithering, isn't it? Who is he? Michael.
Right, we shall leave it.
Okay.
Is that?
Yes. So thank you for listening, everybody. And we look forward to talking to you again next week.
And feel free to follow us on Twitter on Dithering on the Edge. Dithering E. Goodbye for now. And have a fabulous week. Do you have another example rather than sex?
Sorry. No, I don't. Okay. So, for example, if you drive a polluting car this year, but if say you have a car, okay, grams carbon per mile. Trouble is, I can't remember what it is, but if say you've 100 miles or something. I don't know. Let's start again.